My lips are flapping, giving you the breeze today. It's a Friday, a fabulous Friday. Bill, welcome to it. The best day. You said it yourself.
Well, yeah, it is. It is the best of the days. Hi, everybody. I'm Bill, and that's Wendy. Welcome to the show. So much to talk about today, so much to do, and we're just going to give stuff away. We're very, very generous.
We have our last pair of tickets to see An Unpredictable Evening with Todd Rundgren. It's happening September 14th at Silver Creek Event Center at Four Winds Casino, New Buffalo. I'll let you in on a little secret. As soon as you hear a snippet of a Todd Rundgren song, it will be quite obvious. Be the fifth caller, 312-981-7200, and it may be coming up very quickly. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm going to say.
And he's promising, he even says in the title, an unpredictable evening.
Yep.
So pretty much anything can happen, Wendy. There's no rules.
And yesterday at this time, we were talking about the late, great Aretha Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still sad to me. And we were talking about who would play her in a movie. And I guess it was announced in January that Jennifer Hudson had signed on to portray Aretha Franklin in the biopic based on her memoir, Aretha From These Roots.
Your call yesterday.
But how did we not know this?
I don't know. This is the first I've heard of it, but you and I were kind of contemplating when and if they make a bio of her life, and it's inevitable because she's got such an interesting life. Who would play her? And you said Jennifer, and that's who it is.
Well, here's the thing. Before Jennifer Hudson was attached to the project in 2015, Aretha Franklin was on the Wendy Williams show. I don't know why. Sorry.
Oh, no.
That show's out there.
All right.
It was back in 2011, and Aretha herself said that she wanted Halle Berry to play her in the movie. Now, of course, if there's ever a movie based on my life, I will pick the most talented and attractive woman to portray me. That's what you got to do.
Actually, I want Halle Berry to portray me.
Yeah, she's great, Steve. She could play you in a
movie. Right.
Yeah, I could see that. Now, I don't know that Halle Berry, although there have been other movies made about singers where somebody else dubs their voice. So Halle Berry's a great actress and she's very attractive, but I don't know that she could pull that off vocally.
And don't get me wrong, Aretha Franklin was beautiful. Oh my God, all these pictures people were posting, some great bouffant hairdos, and just a beautiful woman.
I think so, too.
So I'm not saying, like, Halle Berry's too pretty to play her.
Right.
That's what it sounded like.
Halle Berry didn't she play Dorothy Dandridge in an HBO movie?
Yes, she did.
And I don't know if she sang in that.
I bet she did.
Did she? Yeah, maybe.
I just keep thinking, was it Joaquin Phoenix who did Johnny Cash?
Yeah.
He did his own singing. It's just more believable.
Right.
If you envelop the role.
Jamie Foxx played Ray Charles. And
I thought you were going to say Jamie Farr.
Jamie Farr played Ray Charles in a movie that was awful because he wasn't a good Ray Charles.
And Jamie Farr was Bob Dylan. No one went to see that.
So funny. Why would you go to see that?
Well, he didn't sing his own songs.
Right.
Jamie Foxx did sing his own songs?
Yeah. And
I didn't see that.
Was
I should.
Great.
He's really good. He's so talented.
I think he won the Academy Award for that. I'm almost positive he did.
Well, this exact conversation that we're having.
No one else is having.
No. It actually caused a shooting in Suffolk, Virginia. Police responded to a report of a gunshot victim on Thursday morning around 10:45. This is just yesterday. Police said the shooting happened and it started with an argument. A witness said he heard two people in a local barber shop arguing over whether or not Halle Berry would play Aretha Franklin in movie. Police said the fight turned physical, and then one of the subjects, identified as 44-year-old Michael Jermel Hatton, produced a firearm, shooting the other man at least once outside the barbershop.
Who was on which side?
Well, Franklin, hang on, there's another guy involved.
Yeah.
Aretha Franklin had previously wanted Berry to play her in an upcoming biopic, as I mentioned, but Halle Berry claimed she couldn't sing and wouldn't do the role justice, according to E! News, so Jennifer Hudson was tapped to play the Queen of Soul. Police said the gunshot victim, identified as 47-year-old Tony Jonathan Lundy, is considered to be in critical condition. According to police, they were treated for injuries and released, but the argument was over whether or not it should be Halle Berry or Jennifer Hudson.
Yeah, that's a heated debate.
We had it without any
nobody
incident.
No, you didn't shoot me. I didn't shoot you. Steve had a piece on him, but we convinced him to just back down a little bit.
Bertrand just shoots us looks. That's really it. But yes, an argument over Aretha Franklin leads to a shooting. That's a crazy world in which we live.
But people get very adamant about their beliefs sometimes, as that story well illustrates, you know? All right, we have many things to tell you. We're still going to talk a bit about Aretha Franklin. I know we did almost the whole show about her yesterday, but there has been some aftermath, and we'll discuss that, and then a lot of other things, so stick around. Don't forget, Todd Rundgren tickets also, anytime when you hear his music.
Might be sooner than you think.
It might be. You said that so mysteriously, Wendy.
It's a night market. It is. Unusual. Can we congratulate Mike from Wheeling? He was caller number 5 when he heard In the Light by Todd Rundgren, which is a great song that we were listening to off the air, and you said it sounded more like someone else.
When I hear Todd Rundgren sing that song, every time I do it, I go, oh, look, Carole King is singing a song.
It sounds just like her.
Yeah.
So a pair of tickets to an unpredictable evening with Todd Rundgren, September 14th, Silver Creek Event Center at Four Winds Casino, New Buffalo. Mike from Wheeling will be there. It's your entertainment escape. If you weren't Mike from Wheeling, you can get your tickets at Ticketmaster.com today.
And so many of our listeners are not what Mike from Wheeling, so here's your chance. All right, so yesterday, just before this show started, we received word that Aretha Franklin had passed away, and we did. We spent a lot of time talking about it yesterday, but I just want to say that in watching all the tributes yesterday, I don't know how much time you spent, but every time I was near a TV, they seemed to be talking about her, and rightfully so. She warranted that. So a couple of things. Thing number one is, I had mentioned yesterday how the Blues Brothers, her just appearing in the movie The Blues Brothers, made a tremendous impact because people who maybe had heard of her but weren't that aware of her all of a sudden got to realize how great she was. And several of the tributes mentioned exactly that, including the fact that she got a brand new record deal from being in that movie. You know, she was doing fine, believe me, but her career was kind of on the downswing a little bit. And then all of a sudden, record executives saw her in that movie and said, wow, Aretha Franklin is still not only around, but singing better than ever.
Yeah.
So it made a huge impact.
And we didn't mention McIntyre Murphy, who passed away. He was her husband, but
yeah,
you depressed. Yes. Not in real life.
Yeah.
You depressed a lot of people by saying pretty much everyone in that movie was...
Oh, a texter pointed that out. I think it was referred to as the Blues Brothers curse. And it's not, it's like saying, oh, the Gone with the Wind curse. Look at all the actors that were in Gone with the Wind, except for Olivia de Havilland, are dead.
The Founding Fathers curse.
Right. Everybody who signed that Declaration of Independence, they're all dead. Something's going on. I don't like it. So sometimes those curses do exist.
I know, but they said, with you pointing it out,
yeah,
that it depresses them. But, I mean, life is depressing, people. We're losing them.
How many years ago did we determine the Blues Brothers was made?
So, 40?
Almost 40 years ago. It's true. So the bulk of the actors in that movie, now, if you'll remember, when they made the Blues Brothers, they went out of their way to get guys and girls who were legends already, so that means they were in their 50s and 60s and 70s.
Good point.
So when you add the time between, it's not going to end pretty.
I'm worried about Olivia de Havilland, though.
102.
Yeah, and you mentioned her.
Yeah,
is she 100? Oh, yeah, well, if she goes, it's not going to be because of Bill.
It's not fully on my shoulders.
Right.
Right.
Is she 102?
She's 102. She looks 98. She looks great. You see her, you go, you can't be 102.
Any chance she'll play Aretha Franklin in the biopic?
I don't think so.
No?
I'd be shocked.
Well,
you don't know.
She can do anything.
Sometimes Hollywood tries crazy stuff. We don't know. All right. But the other thing I wanted to mention is, you and I kind of said yesterday, and we were having fun with this, that it's ironic that both the king and the queen... That's be your Elvis Presley.
The king of rock and roll.
The king of rock and roll. And, of course...
The queen of soul.
The queen of soul, that they had died on the same day. So we just kind of threw it out as kind of a quick thing. But almost every tribute I saw yesterday...
Mentioned that.
...made a big deal out of that.
I know. I said it. I came home and I was talking to Jim and I'm like, yeah, the king and queen died on the same day. He goes, if I hear that one more time, he's like, everybody is focusing on that.
It's because it's...
It is weird.
It's so ironic. And if Prince had died on that same day, then you got something. Then you go, the king, the queen, and a prince?
Well, wasn't Michael Jackson the king of pop?
He was the king of pop.
There was a different region,
June.
Though.
And Farrah Fawcett was the queen of hair.
Right.
And they died on the same day.
Right.
Oh, that's right.
So there you go, king and queen.
Queen Latifah, by the way, doing great. I checked on her this morning to make sure she's okay.
Again, I don't like when you mention people.
And Kevin James, the king of queens, also doing fantastic.
Those two would be on you.
Right. If something horrible happens, right. I'll take full responsibility. Right. No, still. That's rightfully so. Now, here's what I didn't get to say yesterday about Elvis Presley, because
you don't like him, we know.
No, it's not that I don't like him. I understand his place in the history of music so well, and I understand that he brought a charisma to music that people hadn't seen before. I totally understand that. But whenever I think about him, and we didn't get a chance to talk about it yesterday because it was a day to celebrate Aretha Franklin. My next door, when I was growing up, our next door neighbor, Barbara, had pictures of Jesus and Elvis Presley in every room in their house, because to her, Jesus and Elvis were equally as important.
I don't know about equally. I think Jesus was one and Elvis was two.
But that was with, you know, like that went into extra innings, because she honestly, on any given day, would talk about Jesus or Elvis and spend the same amount of time and same amount of love. And like when I was growing up, the only other people that were held in that esteem were, you know how if you go to somebody's house, they're going to have pictures of their family
right.
up. But we, and in my neighborhood anyway, you saw a lot of pictures of Jesus. You saw a lot of pictures of Elvis. You saw a lot of pictures of John F. Kennedy. And then I guess Frank Sinatra would have been the fourth. That was kind of, if there was going to be pictures anywhere in the house that were not of a grandmother or a relative, it was going to be one of those four. That was it. That was the list.
That's weird when you think about it, because these were middle-aged or above people who had them hanging on their wall, and then you had the kids with their, like, Tiger Beat magazine. I would have Willie Ames on my wall and Donny Osmond.
Yeah.
But you'd think as an adult you wouldn't have someone other than your family hanging up.
You would think that, and there was always...
It was a different time.
It was like family.
It is like family. I don't know if people, like, I'm in my head, I'm going through a list of our friends, and when we go to their house, I don't remember seeing anyone that's not connected, you know, through blood displayed. But back then, it was commonplace.
We have a lot of autographed album covers.
Hanging on the walls.
In our family room.
Yeah. I get in the family room. I totally get it, but like when
not
you went
in the
into
foyer.
Barbara's house, that's what you saw in the hallway when you walked in.
Was there a light over
big
it?
Big picture. No, but there were, she would do a flower arrangement underneath both Jesus's picture and Elvis's picture.
God bless Barbara.
And if you said something bad about Elvis, it was like the worst swear word you could ever imagine.
Now, pictures, do the eyes follow you as you walk down the floor?
Yeah, were they the velvet pictures?
The black velvet Elvis?
No.
Yeah. I'll never forget, we went to, I almost said Boys Town. We went to Graceland not too long after, I was a kid, not too long after Elvis died, and I think my mom or dad, there were pictures everywhere you could buy in the shops.
Yeah.
And they said, look how fat he was. And this woman who worked there said, oh, he wasn't fat, bless his heart. He was just bloated with water.
Bloated with water.
I'll never forget that.
There was a special once on PBS about people who were in the business of impersonating Elvis, right? So Rick Saucedo, I think, is the guy we all know here in Chicago. He's probably the most famous of the Elvis impersonators.
Does he still do it?
Oh, I don't know.
I know a Mark Hussman who does a great Elvis.
Yeah.
There was a little Elvis who was a little kid.
I remember that guy. There was a little Elvis impersonator, and then there was also
the little
kid,
Frank Sinatra. I'm confusing
Dakota Horvath.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's the one that was the Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, yeah,
he was great.
That was it.
Loved
and there
him.
Was the Hispanic Elvis called Elvez. Yeah. That's all just from Chicago.
All right, so in the special, there's
and Buzz Killman has them all in his Rolodex, so if we need any of them.
We may need them. All right, so on this special, there's these two girls who are convinced. Now, they're women that are in their early 20s, and they're convinced that Elvis was their dad. So they're being interviewed, and they're both like going out of their way to do the Elvis sneer during the interview. Like every question, they're just doing the Elvis sneer.
Yeah, like that's hereditary.
So that wouldn't be hereditary. So then the guy doing the interview with these guys says, "I'm going to just ask you point blank: was Elvis your daddy?" And they keep looking at each other, and they're both kind of reticent to answer, but they keep looking at each other. And one of them goes, "We asked our mama one time if Elvis was our daddy." And then there's a long pause, and then the other one says, "She wouldn't say he was, but she wouldn't say he wasn't." It's like the funniest thing I've ever
Where
seen.
Where did you see this?
On PBS. It was the best. I laughed so hard I hurt myself. I was laughing so hard.
That's excellent.
Yeah. All right. We have to take a break. We've got a full show ahead. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. Bill's got a little magic up his sleeve.
I sure do. All right. We were talking about Elvis Presley, who...
I think it was my daddy. I love how you say daddy.
Daddy. Daddy. Everything's
not father, away. Not dad.
My daddy. It was my daddy. All right. So we were talking about the weird coincidence that the Queen of Soul and the King of Rock and Roll died on the same day.
And the Sultan of Swat.
Sultan of Swat also died on the same day. We had a couple texters said he was the home run king, and then in brackets, for a little while. That's true. So he was also a king of some sort. But then a couple of people pointed out, while speaking of Elvis and Elvis impersonators, that one of our greatest entertainers used to be, as a child, an Elvis impersonator. And I wasn't sure because I had never heard of this before. So you and I put it in YouTube to see if this is possible. And boy, is it possible. One of our greatest entertainers as a child used to be an Elvis impersonator. And we have some audio of it. Let's listen.
Okay, he is in a little jumpsuit.
Yes, as he should be, yes. While impersonating Elvis Presley,
he's
right?
He's kind of shaking and moving and sneering, and yep. He's got like a pompadour, which Elvis had too.
Yeah.
Is he a singer now?
Yes.
I know who it is.
No,
well, I'm not going to say, but I think I just have a very strong feeling.
How are you getting to this conclusion, Steve? What was it about what you just heard that made you really realize who it might be?
It was more about the way you spoke and referring to him as one of our greatest entertainers now. And
okay, that's fair.
Someone who I know is a child performer.
Should we have Steve guess, or do we want to go? Yeah, Steve, go ahead. Who do you think it is?
Justin Timberlake.
Nope.
No.
Oh. Nope.
Oh, I thought for sure he had it.
Yeah. Nope, it is not Justin Timberlake.
All right, well, if someone knows.
Eva Marie Saint.
Who?
Eva Marie Saint is a terrible guess.
No.
Not even close. No. No.
I remembered hearing this years ago, but I just filed it away with, it didn't really do that much for me, but I guess 312-981-7200, we can take some guesses.
Yeah.
We'll
play the clip again, see if you can figure out who it is. This is a performer now, one of the best in the business, hands down, as talented as they come. But as a child, he, or I'll say, or she.
Not but, a but he.
It's a he. Right? Who is it? Adorable.
It is adorable.
Absolutely adorable.
And I got to tell you, sometimes I don't like kid singers. I mean, just sometimes, you know, was it Vanessa Bayer who did that, I'm a kid and I'm all, it's like, you know, it's just so over the top.
And this has an element of it, too. But it's just so adorable, Wendy. How can you not love this?
And you just look at his face and you know who it is. And right away, Colleen, you know who it is.
It sounds just like Bruno Mars.
It's because it is Bruno Mars. Colleen, well done. So well done.
Well, thank you.
We are. We have a couple of things left in our little prize barrel that we would love to share. Do you ever hang pictures on your wall? Because there's this awesome new contraption. It's called a Never Measure. You can center things on your wall. You never have to pull out a tape measure. You can get yours at nevermeasure.com. It's pretty cool. And we have an indoor desktop weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. So we will set you up.
All right, well, thank you.
Congratulations, thank you. Colleen. Now, we also want to point out that Bruno Mars not only was an Elvis impersonator as a child, but he played an Elvis impersonator in a scene from Honeymoon in Vegas.
When That's
he was
what
only,
that clip is
was he
from.
Four, 3 or 4 years old,
I think.
I don't
know how old he was.
That's amazing. Even more amazing, Wendy, is a texter who added this to our list of celebrities who have passed away on August the 16th. We've already mentioned that the King of Rock and Roll, Elvis Presley, died on August 16th, that the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, that the Sultan of Swing, Babe Ruth, died on August 16th. Also, August 16th, 1956, was the last day for Bela Lugosi.
Why is that significant? Because he is a count. So you have a king, a queen, a sultan, and a count all on the same day.
I guess.
Is that what it's a stretch? He played a count.
And it was Madonna's birthday yesterday, so where does she fit into it?
Well, she doesn't.
She does not.
Okay.
You have to have died on that day.
And I just got a text. Rick Sacedo is still around and performs semi-regularly at Chef Shangri-La in North Riverside, which is an awesome little restaurant that serves all tiki drinks and stuff. Yeah. So Rick Sacedo is still around.
Wow. How about that? All right. A quick break. A lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Wendy, you know who's on the line is our friend Patrick McDonald, film critic for HollywoodChicago.com. Patrick, how are you?
I am doing well, sir. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, because usually you're in the studio.
Yeah.
Patrick, right. I want you to ask Bill if he knows what yippee means.
All right, Bill.
Yeah.
What does yippee mean?
Well, it was a variation for years and years on hippie. A yippee was like a yippee was similar to a hippie.
Youth International Party.
Thank you. Yes, Youth International Party. It was formed on New Year's Eve, 1967, by Abby and Anita Hoffman, Jerry Rubin, Nancy Kershen, and Paul Krasner.
Mm-hmm.
That's they made up the Youth International Party, and then yippee, it sounds like yippee.
And what was their goal when they established, Patrick? Why did they do this?
They were performance artists in a sense, because they went out and did their protests creatively, and you know, like they were trying to levitate the Pentagon at one point, and you know, just doing these little performance elements to jazz up the you know, media coverage of the protests. So they were kind of like court jesters, I guess.
And, were they anarchists, would you say, or not?
Yeah, you know, they got involved in the Vietnam protest riots, 50th anniversary, of course, next week, from the 23rd to the 28th, when the Democratic National Convention was in town, 1968, at the International Amphitheater. The Yippies organized a counter-protest to the Vietnam War and nominated Pigasus the Immortal, a live pig, for their presidential candidate. And then, of course, because they were so prominently featured in that protest, they were prosecuted by, the city attorney, and it became the infamous Chicago 8 trial.
I'm on Time.com, and they said that Abby Hoffman was arrested in New York City for trying to sell $36,000 worth of cocaine. He jumped bail in 74. He vanished, and then he resurfaced in upstate New York with an entirely new name, Barry Freed, and an entirely new face thanks to plastic surgery. He served 1 year in prison and later worked as an environmental activist until he died in 1989. That is a wow. This is from Time.com, so that's pretty wild. Well, I didn't know that.
What a life, you know, when you think about it. He also, I believe, committed suicide. So, you know.
Interesting cat.
There you go.
So you are having Yippee Fest. I'm at YippeeFest.com. Is that you?
Right. Yeah, that is us. That is us. And it's the second year. It's a spiritual continuation of Abby Hoffman Died for Our Sins Festival, which was done by the Mary Archie Theater in Wrigleyville from 1989 to 2016. And a bunch of us took the mantle of that and brought it up to the Prop Theater at 3502 North Elston in Chicago, which is right at Addison and Elston. And we're doing the same thing as Yippee Fest, 3 days of theater, comedy, but we've added music and short films to the mix. So a lot of stuff happening on the northwest side as the planes fly over us.
we'll try
to entertain the masses as that is going on. So,
Bill, do you know who's performing?
I wish I did know.
Flabby Hoffman and the Citrus State Cheerios.
I love Flabby Hoffman. What do we get?
Do you
when
know
we
Flabby?
No, I don't know him, but what do we...
Flabby is a very famous internet radio dude.
The name is great.
Dramageddon is there.
Oh, yeah. Dramageddon.
This is better than Lollapalooza names with some.
How do the ideals of the Chicago 8 play into what's going on politically today, would you say?
Well, I would say that they were unfairly prosecuted, made scapegoats for, you know, the issue of the counter-protesters as far as the Vietnam War was concerned. You know, they were trying to rein it in. And just like today with the political climate, you know, certain elements are trying to rein in the information flow. And one of the things that I think Chicago wanted to do, and the old Mayor Daley, of course, wanted to make examples of people who are going to come in and agitate the city.
Sure. I don't know, Patrick, if any, are any of the Chicago 8 still with us? Do we know?
I would have to look up the names. I'm wondering myself, too. I didn't do that research that deeply.
I'm just curious if they're endorsing.
Jerry Rubin's still alive. I mean, he was definitely one of them.
Yeah.
Bobby Seale's still alive, I think.
Mm. I think you're right.
He was the one that was gagged in the courtroom, mm-hmm. so infamously. And the whole thing was, too, that Julius Hoffman was the judge, and, of course, Abby Hoffman was one of the defendants.
No relation, though.
But he made a big deal of it, so... They did a movie, I believe in 2011 of the Chicago 8, kind of a small independent thing. And, actually Thomas Ian Nicholas, the infamous Rookie of the Year, played Abby Hoffman in that one.
Right.
So, Uncle Bobo will be there, the comedy stylings of Uncle Bobo. and there's a burlesque show featured by P.S.
Right.
Burlesque.
Oh,
this
they're,
is really, you've got everything.
They're great. We have got everything. We got Fire Eaters. We've got the Dark Room Men, my acoustic act.
Excellent.
You had me at Uncle Bobo.
Future, my comedy act.
Yep.
Our comedy act.
All right, so how do people get involved, Patrick? What do they need to do for tickets?
They need to go to yippiefest.com. $15 for a day package where you can see all the acts in one day. $25 for the whole festival. That is a bargain. A bargain, I say.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have Yippie Fest pins that are designed like the Yippie pins of 1968.
Oh, impressive.
We're honoring the spirit of art as anarchy.
Very nice.
And this is at the Prop Theater, 3502 North Elston in Chicago. It starts tonight at 7 and runs through Sunday?
That is right. Sunday until we're done.
All right.
Have a good time.
All right.
Thank you, Patrick. Excellent. Have a great weekend.
Thanks for having me on, Bill.
Absolutely.
Sure. YippieFest.com is where you go.
Very
Are you
good.
Going?
Yeah, Flabby Hoffman's there, Uncle
Isn't
Bobo.
That great?
I'm gonna be there. Yeah. it's everything you want.
It is.
All right, we'll take a quick break and then some news and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thanks, Steve. It's Bill and it's Wendy. Alexander Zalbin joins us every Friday to talk television. He's the managing editor of Decider.com, a great website. If you like TV, if you like entertainment, visit Decider.com. Hello, Alexander.
Hello. How are you guys?
Very good. Nice to have you back. I want to start out with a follow-up to a story we did last week. I think we've actually talked about it a little bit the last couple of weeks, and that's Chris Hardwick, who was away mm-hmm. from The Talking Dead for a while. Now, he was reinstated. AMC did an investigation, a private investigation, and decided that despite some allegations from his ex-girlfriend, Chloe Dykstra, they were comfortable enough putting him back on the show. But now I'm reading that some staffers there at The Talking Dead boycotted. They didn't want him back, and they have left the show. Is that true?
Yeah, there were two staffers. I'll look up for you exactly who they were, but I believe there was a senior EP and one of the regular staffers as well left the show before the episode of Talking Dead where he came back. The show did go on as planned, and in fact, as we speculated, he did end up addressing the allegations very specifically at the top of the show.
Which, Bill, we were wondering about.
Whether he would or not. Yeah.
And you seem to think he would. It's hard not to mention something like that. Back to you, Alexander. Sorry I interrupted you.
Oh, no, that's fine. And he did, actually. He talked about it right up top. He said this has been a really hard couple of weeks for him. It was hard to be away from the Walking Dead community, is the way he put it, because it has been so much a part of his life for so many years. But he was very excited to be back. He was very excited to be on the show. And then after that, again, as we speculated, it went into the credits, and then they had the regular discussion about Fear the Walking Dead.
I didn't see it when it happened. I've only heard your account of it. What was the reaction from the audience? How did they respond to this?
I mean, listen, you're going to be in a studio audience. You're going to react however they want you to react, you know? So it was appreciative. It's full of Walking Dead fans, so they're going to be mostly very supportive of him. I think online it was a very different thing, and as you'd expect, it was really split on the return and his ingenuousness or disingenuousness in terms of him coming back. Ultimately, we only know two people's accounts of these things, of exactly what went on. People are going to form their own opinions. And even though he is back on the show, I don't think the discussion is going to go away anytime soon.
But if the fact that he's been reinstated and they did their own investigation, in my eyes, it means that he did not do what he's accused of.
I think that's probably a fair way of looking at it. The other way that people look at it is that Chloe put out these things that she said. She never used his name. Her goal was not to get him fired from the show in the first place. It was just to be honest about these things for herself. There's been a lot of talk online about people saying, I believe Chloe. And I think they've been very careful to say, I believe Chloe, not I blame Chris Hardwick.
Yeah.
Because they're two different discussions in a certain way. They're very tied together, but they're two very different things. So ultimately, has it hurt his reputation irrevocably? I think yes. But has it hurt his career? No, if that seems fair.
Do you think this in any way opens a door, either opens it wide open or opens it just a crack, for other people who have been accused of things, but it's been kind of vague whether or not they're guilty? Aziz Ansari is the first one who comes to mind. I wonder if you're Aziz Ansari and you see this, you go, well, somebody has kind of rebounded. Maybe it's time to reemerge in the public again, do you think, or not?
I mean, listen, that's been a large part of the discussion over the past couple of weeks. I think in response to this Chris Hardwick thing in particular, to take a big step back, as soon as all the Me Too stuff and the Time's Up stuff happened, aside from somebody like Harvey Weinstein, who has committed hundreds of crimes, or at least been accused of hundreds of crimes, and is not really going to come back from something like that, these middle ground people, where it's one accusation or a couple of accusations, people have noted since the beginning, it hasn't necessarily affected them. They've essentially, you know, taken a little bit of a break, but they still have projects going on. If you look at somebody like James Franco, I think that's a perfect example, where he had multiple accusations against him, but he has a movie coming out later this month. He's going to be on The Deuce on HBO. That hasn't necessarily gone away. He's still producing things. He's still directing things. And for better or for worse, Hollywood loves a redemption story. So I know this is very wide-reaching at this point, but you take a look at somebody like Mel Gibson, who said and did some completely reprehensible things, and then later on got nominated for Oscars, and it's looked at as, wow, he's really learned something, he's really gone through this journey, isn't that wonderful? So to the short way of answering your question, I would say, is I think we're going to see most, if not all, of these people coming back at some point.
I wonder what it does, though, in terms of actresses who take a stand. I'm blanking on the name of the actress who won the Academy Award for the movie The Room a couple years ago. Is it Brie Larson? Is that her name?
Mm-hmm.
It is, right?
Yes.
All right. So she's been very adamant about certain actors who she just flat out won't be associated with and work with because of various allegations. I wonder if that will become a bigger issue in the future if they hire an actor who's got some allegations, if there are actresses who just go, if you want that guy working for you, you're not going to get me.
I think that's absolutely what should be happening and absolutely what is happening. Somebody like Brie Larson is in a great position for that. She has a huge Marvel movie coming up with Captain Marvel. She's going to be in the next Avengers movie. She has critical support and public support as well. So she is able to go out there and really say those things. The tricky thing, again, comes with the middle ground. You know, we've seen for decades now that, frankly, women who speak up are more harmed than the men who actually or reportedly did these deeds. So I think there's still a lot of trepidation in terms of talking up, in terms of talking about these things. But hopefully, like you said, people like Brie Larson, people like, say, Tessa Thompson, who are more vocal about these issues and are using their fame to really push things forward, hopefully will move the needle a little bit. But we'll have to wait and see.
All right. I have a new show that I'm loving and I want your opinion on, because a lot of times you get to see more than we do. AMC, I'm so into The Preacher and Better Call Saul. That's AMC, right?
Mm-hmm.
I get them mixed up.
Yep.
So after Better Call Saul, they debuted Lodge 49. And it stars mm-hmm. Wyatt Russell, who is the child of Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell. And I watched the premiere, and at first I didn't know that I was loving it. I thought the acting was kind of bad. And then mm-hmm. all of a sudden I got sucked into it, and I'm looking forward to the next episode.
Yeah, it's a quirky one. And like you said, we talked about it a little bit around the office, and our reviewer, I think, pointed out pretty correctly that the show doesn't really know what it is for the first half. And then when it gets to the second half, which is about this place, Lodge 49, it's fraternal lodge, like, I guess, the Elks or...
The Masons.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say the Stonecutters, because my only references are The Simpsons. But once it gets into that, it becomes quirky and fun and weird in exactly the right way. And like I said, it has a great cast. It's definitely very different. And the weirdest, quirkiest detail about it is it's produced by Paul Giamatti. So he's not in the show, but it feels like a Paul Giamatti movie a little bit in a certain way, which is fun.
And you get to see Brian Doyle Murray, which is always a pleasure to hear his voice.
Yeah, yep, absolutely.
I like it. Have you seen more than the first episode?
I've read a couple of reviews from our reviewer beyond the first episode, and they really enjoyed it a lot. So beyond that first half of the first episode, once you push through it, I think you're going to enjoy the series.
And they phrased the, you know, the new Lebowski, or the Lebowski's back. Mm-hmm. And I don't, other than his look, really, it's I don't see any real connection. Do you?
I think, again, in the first half, it's a little meandering. It's a little weird. But once it starts to crystallize the concept of the series, it definitely gets far away from that.
Are you you're referring to the Big Lebowski?
Yeah, that's what the promos were saying. Oh. It's like the Lebowski revisited. Wasn't it something like that, Alexander, the promos for it?
He has a long beard. That's really it.
Oh, that's the only connection.
That's strange.
I know. It was because I was expecting bowling or something to happen. Mm-hmm. But
it's very peculiar.
I know. But it is really good. Give it a chance, because as Alex said, you get past, starts out slow, but it finishes strong.
Yeah. All right. Alexander Zelbin is our guest, managing editor of Decider.com. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. We'll pick that up right after this. Alexander Zelbin is our guest from The Decider. Visit thedecider.com, a great website. I have to admit, Alexander, The Alienist was a show that looked really great to me, and I couldn't wait to see it, and somehow it got right through me. I didn't get to see it, but there's good news for people who did see it. Very good news.
Yeah, I think actually most people are like you. It was kind of funny because it's a best-selling book and has been so for years at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But not a lot of people watch the show, and frankly, not a lot of people were talking about it. But at the same time, it, at least according to TNT, 50 million people watched it across their multiple platforms. It also got a surprise number of Emmy nominations, again, given that there wasn't a lot of conversation about it. It got 6 Emmy nominations, including Outstanding Limited Series. And most likely off of that, TNT has ordered a sequel series with the same cast. It's based on the second book by Caleb Carr, The Angel of Darkness, and it's going to bring Daniel Brühl, Luke Evans, and Dakota Fanning back to investigate old-timey mysteries, which, if you're a fan of that, that's good news.
So forever with television, you had to watch it kind of immediately, and if you didn't, it wasn't considered to be a hit. But now, as you just pointed out with this show, The Alienist, there's mm-hmm. so many different ways to enjoy a show, even after its initial run, that it doesn't matter if it's big overnight, does it?
I think it probably depends on the network and depends on the show a little bit. For somebody like TNT, that's a basic cable network, you know, you're not necessarily talking about HBO where you need to get subscriptions, or broadcast where you really, really are depending on that advertising. for something like TNT, this is more of a passion project for them. It's something that puts them on the map of top-tier networks like an AMC or an HBO. So having that feather in their cap is good. And then, as you said, they're more looking for, okay, over time, are people watching this? Are they talking about this versus on a week-to-week basis? Though, frankly, that's nice, too.
Yep. A texter wants to know from you, Alexander. They're a big fan of the show Yellowstone. That's the show that Kevin Costner... It's a movie, right? Is it a show or a movie? I'm trying to remember.
It's a TV show, and it's actually been a really huge hit, frankly, for the Paramount Network. It's been doing really well on a weekly basis.
They want to know if it's going to be a one season and out for the show or if there will be more.
No, I believe there's going to be more. I believe it's renewed for a second season by Paramount Network. It should have the same cast. It's not necessarily an anthology like a lot of other shows with this top-tier cast. I don't know when it's going to be on yet, but most likely sometime next year would be my guess.
Netflix has been stockpiling some of the biggest producers in television. Almost every week you read about another producer that's shifting gears and heading over to Netflix. They've made another big acquisition, huh?
They have. They picked up, this was ruined for a while, but Kenya Barris, who is the creator of Black-ish and Grown-ish on Freeform, and he has a couple of other series in the works for the ABC networks. But they've officially poached him, at least for the next 3 years. We don't know the full details of the deal, but it seems like it might be as much as $100 million to develop series specifically for Netflix, and then there will be an option to continue that beyond that. So add in Shonda Rhimes and also Ryan Murphy, and other than Greg Berlanti and Dick Wolf, they basically have all of the big producers who are currently working for TV. It's kind of crazy.
My Netflix bill just went up to $3,000 a month. That's too high, isn't it? I shouldn't be paying that much, should it?
It's worth it. It's absolutely worth it.
All right. You mentioned The Simpsons earlier. We all love The Simpsons, and Matt Groening has new work coming up.
He does. It just dropped on Netflix today, actually. It's a new series called Disenchantment, and where Simpsons is set in the present and Futurama is set in the future, this is set in the fantasy past, so it pokes fun at elves and witches and fairies and things like that. It stars Abby Jacobson as a drunken princess named Bean, who doesn't want to be a princess. She is paired with a weird elf named Elfo. And Eric Andre plays the literal demon on her shoulder named Lucy, which is short for Lucifer. It starts a little slow, but if you remember, if you're a fan of Futurama, same sort of thing with that series. Once they kind of figured things out, it sort of started to speed up. So I always hesitate to say this with Netflix shows, but it really is, if you're a fan of Matt Groening, stick through the first couple of episodes. They start to figure out the formula. They start to figure out the jokes and the characters, and it becomes a lot of fun.
773 wants to know from you, Alex, if it's true that The Office is getting a reboot. What are you hearing about that?
It is not exactly true, but it's also not untrue. You know, it's one of those things that it is constantly in the ethos. People are constantly talking about because it was such an enormous hit, and it continues to be an enormous hit, particularly on streaming. So my bet is it will come back at some point. At the current time, there's no real plans for an actual reboot or an actual reunion of the cast, though it is something they talk about. However, what they may have seen is there's a new version of The Office that's going to be popping up in India, which is not too surprising because it's actually, the format has been used in, I think, as much as a dozen countries at this point.
Yeah.
So, and you know, any language you speak, you can find a new version of The Office somewhere.
Well, everybody works all over the world.
I've heard John Krasinski say he would love to do it, which is strange because he's got quite a film career going, but he's the first one who goes, yeah, if they do it, I want in.
Yeah, the whole cast, they still really like each other. They chat sometimes. Like you said, he has not just a film career, but he's going to be Jack Ryan for Amazon coming up pretty soon, and that's already been picked up for a second season. But I think, you know, they could figure something out. They come back for a week, and they film a reunion special like the original UK Office did instead of a full series, or maybe even a limited series. I think they would, if they could figure out a good concept and a good way of doing it that would be fun and funny, I think the cast would be mostly game for coming back.
I wouldn't doubt it. That'd be fun to see.
I would love to see
that.
That'd
be great. Alex, thanks for joining us. Always fun to talk to you. And if people want to hear more about anything we've talked about, go to thedecider.com. It's right there on your internet. Thanks so much, Alexander. Have a great weekend.
Thanks for having me on. You too.
Absolutely. Thanks. All right, a quick break, some news, and then more of us, Bill and Wendy, on WGN. Very superstitious, Wendy. Very superstitious. It's Bill and Wendy. Welcome to the show. Hope you've been enjoying it. We still have a bit to do, and then we do the bonus hour online. We would love to have you join us there.
The stream of consciousness.
The stream of consciousness.
Bill Left Unleashed.
I'm not saying... Oh, thank you, Wendy. I'm not saying...
You always say thank you. I don't... It's not...
Because you're throwing my name and you're not even including your own name. It's you're also streaming.
Yeah, but you're more unleashed than I am. On the stream.
On the stream. Maybe you're one of those people that you enjoy the Wintrust business lunch, but maybe you're allergic to it. Maybe your arm is all scratchy. You got a rash going because of the Wintrust business lunch. We offer you an option now. You can join us on the stream. It's fun.
It is fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
I'll give you that.
Yep. All right. There's a bunch of strange stories. Things have happened in the last couple of days that just because of the time constraints, we've not gotten to. So let's discuss them now. Let's start out with this one. There's a woman who's had a contact lens stuck in her eye for 28 years.
You've brought this up before. You were always fearful of wearing a contact, or you knew someone. You're scared it's going to get on the other side of your eye or something. What's your irrational fear?
I have a bunch of them, but for this particular instance. All right. So I have, when I was a kid, my mom had contact lens, and now as an adult, my wife does and one of my daughters does. And I can't even watch them apply the contact lens to their eye because
it's
I'm
weird.
Almost positive that the lens could somehow get to the back of your eye and, you know, be in your head forever. Is that impossible?
Well, some woman who wore contacts called and said that that's not really possible. I mean, it can get back there, but it's not going to stay there the rest of your life because it would you'd know it's missing and an eye doctor would extract it.
But I've seen, like, in all the instances I've just mentioned, my mom, my daughter, my wife, and other people too, where it gets like, oh, it's not where it's supposed to be, and they kind of get all panicky and they try to maneuver it with the side of their hand to get the contact lens back to the front of their eye. And if I needed contact lens, I wouldn't be able to. I couldn't do
well,
it.
Well, you would wear glasses, which is what I do. I can't imagine putting a contact lens in.
I would wear a monocle probably. Because I like that look. I want to bring back the look
It'll
of the...
It'll be a clear glass.
Yeah.
No prescription?
No.
They just sell,
like the look.
Like, you know, Claire's Boutiques, they sell, like, just plain glasses for people who want to change up their look.
Is that just true?
Clear glass, yeah.
Oh,
and,
that's impressive.
I wear glasses really just for driving.
Yeah.
They're bifocals, but I need a midfocal. I should have gone trifocals. I wasn't thinking.
Yeah.
So, and my son Dylan, my youngest, just was told he had to wear glasses like all the time.
Yep.
And he said, I said, well, you could always think of contacts if you don't. He goes, there's no way. And
For the same reason as me? Yeah.
And I can't, and for me too, I can't explain how to do it. He doesn't think it's going to go in the back of his eye. It's just, can you imagine, you know, when you get an eyelash in your eye, it ruins like your whole day until you get it out.
Right.
I would imagine that's what it feels like to have a contact on your eye.
I'm sure you get used to it, and it probably takes a couple of days, and then you don't even think about it anymore.
Your eye is gelatinous. I don't want to be putting stuff on it.
No, I'm with you. Well, here's a woman in England who, for 28 years, had a contact lens stuck in her eye and didn't even know it.
All right, well, I stand corrected.
Says,
this is your fear.
This is my fear come to life. Imagine going to the eye doctor because your upper eyelid is swollen and painful, and the doctor tells you that it's a cyst and operates on the cyst, and then inside the blister,
oh,
I hope everyone's
God.
Enjoying your lunch. Is everybody enjoying your lunch? The surgeon finds a contact lens, a rigid gas-permeable contact lens, but you haven't worn that type of contact lens in 28 years.
Well, that's your own fault for not keeping track of it.
The most you can have is two. That's the absolute highest number. So how do you forget to have taken one out?
Some of them were disposable, so...
Oh, yeah, right.
And you have to have a spare pair and stuff.
Right.
But, I mean, wouldn't you... I guess, even just say she was drinking and was going to bed.
Back then, you mean, 28 years ago?
And kind of forgot. She took one out and thought she took them both out.
Right.
You'd still feel something the next morning.
I don't know how she didn't feel it.
I don't believe her.
The story I just told you is what happened to a 42-year-old British woman, according to reports. The encapsulated contact lens can be seen on an MRI. It started out
MRI, as MRI, get it?
Oh, that's good. That's very good, Wendy. Started out as a pea-sized lump just below her left eyebrow. The cyst grew over a 6-month period until it was visible on an MRI. Again, the joke. In addition to swelling and pain when touched, her left eyelid drooped. You can imagine. Well, yeah, you could imagine it would, right? When surgeons discovered the rigid contact, it was intact. It appeared to have been perfectly encapsulated by tissue. In the process of removing it, the contact was cracked and chipped. The woman was bewildered, it says here, Wendy.
I'm sure she was more than that.
It just says bewildered. I'll assume you're right, though. Then her mother remembered an accident when the woman was just 14 years old. While playing badminton, she was hit in the left eye by a shuttlecock. She wore rigid...
You made yourself laugh, didn't you?
I like a good shuttlecock story.
I know.
She wore rigid contacts at the time, and the contact was in the injured eye, but was never found. Because the injury resolved quickly with her conservative care, the family assumed that the contact had flown out of her eye during the badminton match and had been lost.
She was a little cockeyed.
She never used... You know what? I'm going to enjoy that on my way home. I'm not going to enjoy okay. that here because I'm a professional.
Well, shuttlecock, later, I guess I should have said.
Yeah, that would have been funnier. All right.
You just have a dirty mind.
I don't. She never used rigid contacts again after the accident. So that's what happened. The family assumed that during the excitement of the badminton match, it flown out of her eye, but it didn't. It was stuck in her eye for 28 years.
I'm sorry, but between the shuttlecock incident and 23 years later when the cyst happened, there would have been some irritation or something that would have...
I think so, too.
And if she wore contacts, she wouldn't go to the eye doctor anytime in those 23 years.
Yeah, this is mysterious.
I don't believe it. And someone says that... gas permeable contacts are not disposable. They're the hard lenses. They're older. They have a steep learning curve on how to use those.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And then, Bill, a contact lens cannot go to the back of your eye and into your head. It's impossible.
Is it, though?
Yes.
I wonder.
Soft lenses are great. Can't even feel it when they're in.
Yeah. But those, like, over time would dissolve, wouldn't they? I don't know how much time.
I don't know.
You don't think they would dissolve?
But if you had a hard contact in your eyes, even if it rolled on the top or bottom, it would be an irritant, and there's no way it would take you 23 years to come to the conclusion.
I don't think so either. This is very mysterious.
All right, Bernie's here to scare everyone, I think. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, hon.
Hey, sweetie.
Yeah, I just had a real bad incident. Years ago, when the contacts were new, I had a buddy that had to have the best of everything, and he had contact lenses, and we went to the Golden Gloves over there at St. Andrews on the northwest side, and after about the first bout, we were in the washroom for the next probably hour and a half trying to get that damn thing. It rolled to the back of his eye, and enough problems, and I couldn't do anything.
Was he going crazy during this? Was he just nuts? Because I can't imagine that being in the back of your eye.
That's when you go to the eye doctor and they take it out. It's not like
I would never put anything in my eye. Right after that, I made the decision. I'll go with glasses.
I'm with you.
I agree. Thank you, Bernie.
Thanks, Bernie.
Sweetheart, thanks for calling. He called me hun.
He called, and then you called him a nice name, and he ignored that.
Yeah, I know.
He was nervous. You made him nervous.
Some women get offended, whatever. Because I've heard people like, don't call me that.
Right.
I don't care, but I'm just going to call you something else, Pookie. Yeah.
That's worse. I think that's worse.
It is worse.
All right, we'll take a quick break and then more strange news stories. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right. Is it possible that a woman could have a contact lens stuck in her eye for 28 years? That's the story coming out of England. Big news out of England, where a woman has had a contact lens stuck in the back of her head for 28 years. Ouch.
All right. Well, someone has texted us, Bill, about this, and this is what the text says. Orson Bean on Johnny...
All right. Time out.
Orson Bean gets very few mentions on radio anymore, but I love Orson Bean.
That's why I thought it was important to share this with
you. He used to be on game shows in the 60s all the time.
I totally remember him. There are only two guys I know named Orson. Welles and Bean.
Orson Welles and Orson Bean, right.
That's really it.
And Mork calling Orson on Mork and Mindy. Remember that was...
Oh, it was Orson?
At the end of Mork and Mindy, he'd make a call to Orson.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Orson Bean on Johnny Carson once said, a contact gets lost in your brain, then you can finally think clearly.
It's very funny. We need more Orson Bean.
I know.
We need more Orson Bean.
But if it's in the back of your head and gets lost in your brain, then you finally can think clearly.
You know, the original plan for Millennium Park was just to have Orson Bean standing there, and he couldn't do it, so they put up the other Bean, and it's been a success. They knew what they were doing. All right, the other strange story, Wendy, and you've seen this yourself. You know I'm not making this up.
Yes.
There was a guy at the Los Angeles Zoo who decided to spank the hippopotamus.
It's not code, people. He really spanked the hippo. No,
we just mentioned Orson Bean a minute ago. Don't get him upset. Come on. For reasons I don't understand, and maybe you do, and if you do, please explain it to me. Here's a guy who shows up to the zoo, and he gets a bright idea that he's going to go up to the... He's going to not climb into the enclosure, but lean way over.
He still had to climb over one wall to get closer to the two little... Okay, they're not little. The two hippos that are just sitting there munching on some grass.
Right.
Just having a good old day.
Right.
And then a little slap on the behind.
First of all, what did they do to deserve it?
Nothing.
They were just being hippopotamuses. And he just shows up and he does this. Now, the bigger question is, what do you do with a guy who does something like this? This isn't good for anybody. This is bad for everybody.
Well, did they find him? Because the video clearly shows his face and what he's wearing. And Bill and I watched it several times.
It was our Zapruder film. We kept backing it up, going forward. Were there two hippopotamuses? Yes, maybe there were.
Hippopotami. But it looks like he's like, he has the look on his face like, watch this, like someone dared him to do it.
Yeah.
And he kind of looks around, but it's very like orchestrated. He's like almost overacting.
Right. He does like a shh, like he holds his index finger up to his mouth, like, shh, don't scare the hippos while I spank them. Right?
Right.
And he
so
sneaks over.
So obviously his buddy was across the enclosure videotaping because who would he be saying shh
right,
to?
Right, right, right.
Did they find him? Because he should be fined.
He should be both forms of the word. As of the writing of this at Huffington Post, he has still not been found. But that's got to be dangerous. That sets a bad precedent for people who see this and go, oh, I guess that's allowable behavior at the Los Angeles Zoo to spank the animals.
Yeah, that you're not supposed to feed the animals or spank them.
Right. We have the same rule here at WGN Radio.
We do?
Yeah. For the on-air talent. Please don't feed or spank the on-air talent.
I just have to hear this. I'm sorry.
I want a hippopotamus for Christmas.
This makes it worse.
Only a hippopotamus.
I think this song makes a sad story even sadder. I really do.
God, this kid has the most annoying voice.
This is Bruno Mars as a child. Did you know that? It is.
Is it a boy or a girl?
Oh, I don't know the end. I don't see sex the way you do, Wendy.
Bruno Mars just made my day. He just made my week.
Well, earlier today we played Bruno Mars, about that age, doing Elvis in Honeymoon in Vegas.
Yeah.
Frightening.
Yeah.
It was adorable.
You know what? Adorable, David. Adorable.
It was adorable. And you can totally tell it's him.
Yeah.
But you don't spank the animals.
Words to live by.
So I hope they...
Someone really was trying to...
Oh, they did it.
He succeeded.
And he's still alive?
Yeah. He didn't go into the enclosure. He just kind of leaned way over. I don't know. When you worked at Brookfield Zoo, did you ever have any incidents of this sort of behavior, Wendy, where someone would go in and say, I'm close enough, I could reach out and touch an ant? That never happened, did it?
No, and it's happened at other zoos, and like you will see people get eaten by a tiger, maybe not eaten, but attacked,
yeah,
because that's their enclosure. At Brookfield Zoo, when I worked there, I was on the railroad train and or motor safari, so if we saw someone, we would say, hey, get out of there.
A strict warning.
Plus, there are docents and security guards that walk around, so right. I don't think people would be able to...
Right.
Because this wasn't like a far-out exhibit. There were people there, and yeah, it's just he kind of walked over the stone grotto, the first layer, and then leaned over the second one and spanked. It was
spanked
a very quick little spank.
Yeah. Yep.
Did you see the guy on the road in, I think it's in Wyoming, in Yellowstone?
Oh, with the bison?
Yes.
Yeah, this was...
It's like, really?
What happened there?
Are
I didn't see
people incredibly
this.
Just... stupid and don't understand.
There's an element of that.
The animal is in its home. You're the visitor.
Yeah.
Behave appropriately.
Right.
Like, don't get in their way.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, there's video of that. It's a buffalo runs into the car. Is that the one?
No. I think this was a bison, and the guy got out of his car and was kind of like doing a get in your face, except that one. And it's like, he kind of learned rather rapidly that the bison wasn't overly impressed with him. In fact, was like, you know, really, you should get out of my space.
I have two situations that this could not make sense in. One is, you know, you have a family in your car, so you go, kids,
watch
this.
What I can
or
do.
You have a date or a wife. Honey, look at this. Either way,
it's
stupid.
It's not always going to end well. Yep.
I hope they find the guy.
I hope they do, Wendy. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then Wendy and I are headed toward the stream. The bonus hour is taking place in just a few minutes, or stay here and listen to the Wintrust Business Lunch. This is WGN.